Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show. I'm Gregory Berg. I want to remind you that this week of morning shows, the first full week of 2016, is devoted to rebroadcasts of some of our favorite morning shows from the past year. On today's program, you're going to hear the conversation which I recorded in the middle of last year with Elizabeth Heidorn, the executive director of the Racine Zoo, relatively new on the job, very new to the job at the time that we had our conversation, in which she talks not only about the Racine Zoo itself, but also about some of the other interesting places that her career has taken her before Racine. So that conversation is coming up in just a moment. Just a quick reminder about some of the other conversations that are going to be coming up this week. On tomorrow's morning show, we will rebroadcast my memorable conversation with Ray Cross, president of the University of Wisconsin System. It was certainly an honor for me to welcome Dr. Cross into our studios at the time that he was paying a visit to the University of Wisconsin Parkside. We had a conversation which is well worth sharing with you again, and that will be on tomorrow's program. On Thursday, you'll hear a conversation which I recorded just before homecoming at Carthage. So that was back in the fall. A conversation with several different people involved in the renovation of the Straz Science Center, the oldest building on the Carthage campus, and a building which was long overdue for some extensive renovation. And if you've been in Straz since its reopening, you know what a beautiful structure it has now become. It's really interesting to hear some of the background about that development project from people like Bill Hoare, the business manager of Carthage, and a couple of different science professors who had a hand in some of the choices that were made. And so we'll replay that conversation on Thursday. And on Friday, we'll replay the live broadcast, which we did from the grounds of the new Dream Playground on the north side of Kenosha, a extraordinarily beautiful and intriguing playground, which is entirely accessible to all kinds of children, including those confined to wheelchairs. At last in Kenosha, there is a beautiful playground for them to enjoy. So those are the rebroadcasts that we will have, and we want to remind you that the Morning Show Archive is now very clearly found on the front page of WGTD's beautiful new website, WGTD.org. Again, today's Morning Show broadcast is a rebroadcast of a conversation first heard in the early summer of 2015. And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I am Gregory Berg. And I'm very, very happy to welcome into our studios for the very first time, and I hope for not the last, Beth Heidorn, who is the new executive director of the Racine Zoo. In fact, she is brand spanking new on the job. She began on the 6th of April, so she has scarcely had a chance to catch her breath, and here she is joining us on the morning show. But again, I'm very excited about this opportunity, not only to talk with her about the Racine Zoo, this beautiful jewel in the heart of Racine, and its relationship to the community and her hopes and dreams for its future, but also to talk with Beth about the really interesting career that she has had in a number of different places around the country, doing what she loves so much. So, Beth Heidorn, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good to have you here. Let's get you just a little closer to the mic, but that's great. Yeah,
okay.
Just absolutely great. Super, super. So, first of all, as I mentioned, you just began on the job on the 6th of April. So, are you still a little shell-shocked, still moving in, still getting the lay of the land, or Is the Racine Zoo and the community of Racine starting to feel like home already?
It is already starting to feel like home already. Yes, I am still moving in and all of those types of things, but it's been just a great transition. And I just love the people in the community that I've already, and all those people I've already met, and I've got a fabulous staff, so that makes it a lot easier too.
I want you to say on the air something you said to me before we went on the air, which is namely the really good feeling you had as you accepted this position to come to Racine and to be at the Racine Zoo. I know part of it has to do with your desire to be a little closer to family, but I know you also come into this with a really good feeling about the Racine Zoo and about what it means to the people of Racine.
Absolutely, Greg. What's really nice is that everyone, the community, supports this zoo. It is really, as you said, it's a gem within the city of Racine, and it's a blessing to have that and have people grow up with this zoo in their backyard, and people can rally around that. And when I first was thinking about taking this job and I was looking for places to live and all of that, everyone within three sentences were all telling me, oh my gosh, you have to go to the zoo. They didn't know who I was. And so it was just really like, oh man, this is just such a great feeling and just such community support. It's wonderful.
Very good. Let's find out a little bit about where you come from originally and at what point in your life you started to become so very, very interested in animals.
Well, that's a great question. I was born and raised in Minnesota. So I am a Midwest girl.
Where in Minnesota, if I may ask?
Mankato was where I grew up, just south of the Twin Cities.
Right.
And I went to school at St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota, which was a great experience. I love that school.
My dad went there.
Awesome. Well, we have something in common, and I appreciate that. And then I started interning, which is usually how most people get into zoos and aquariums, is you're going to try to experience the different types of programs and jobs that you could take. And I did that at Como Zoo in St. Paul, as well as the Minnesota Zoo. And then a little bit after I graduated from college, I was hired at Minnesota Zoo. So that internship certainly helped. And I was there just about 15 years.
And the rest is history. So what was sort of the initial nudge towards the animal kingdom for you? I mean, did you, as a youngster, visit a zoo and fall in love with the place? Or what are we talking about
here? Yeah, we had a small zoo in Mankato, so that was always lovely to go visit. But I think probably because my mom said to me once, well, you know, you grew up in a zoo, so you might as well work in one. And it was kind of an off-the-handed comment, and I think that is that's where my passion started to come in. I've always loved wildlife and nature. And I want people to become stewards of the planet. And it just seemed to be the right fit for me, being able to take care of the planet.
So you went to St. Olaf already with this goal in mind.
Well, that's a great question. I was a biology major. And so I kind of went in where I thought maybe I'd be a marine biologist or something like that. But, you know, we have our January terms, and I was able to do a great internship at Como Zoo, and I think that's really sparked my interest more on the zoo side as opposed to the marine biology side. And everything just started to fall into place, and I had great professors at St. Olaf that really helped nudge me along in this pursuit.
So you had this internship at the Como Zoo and then ultimately at the Minnesota Zoo, and it sounds like you had quite a long time there and probably had kind of a plethora of experiences. I mean, are we talking about starting from the proverbial bottom rung of the ladder?
Yes, I was an unpaid intern. And, you know,
can't get much more bottom rung than that.
And I worked 40 hours a week as an intern, trying to get to know the zoo and all its aspects. And worked three jobs in order for me to live up in that particular area. So I just, you know, got to pay the bills anyway. And I interned with in the education area. I helped with the children's zoo and dealt with the goats and the kids that would come in there. Did some things for summer camp. So it was really kind of a well-rounded internship. And I started to fall into the track of the education side where I was able to engage kids and audiences of all ages and not necessarily have to shovel the manure. So that kind of worked a little bit to my favor. So that's kind of, I think, why I lean towards that side.
Very good. So ultimately, by the time you left the Minnesota Zoo after 15 years, where were you in its hierarchy? I mean, by the time you left?
I was the director of education, or what we referred to as discovery programs. We didn't want people to see us just as K through 12 school group education. We really were multi-generational and all ages and aspects of education and continuing education for people. So we had kind of changed our name a little bit, and I was at that level as in the management team. So
wow, sounds like a very rich opportunity. Is the Minnesota Zoo a good-sized zoo?
It is, and it is a state zoo, actually. It's located in Apple Valley, Minnesota, and it was a wonderful experience, and it continues to grow and ebb and flow with the seasons, too.
Very good. Well, you made a really interesting shift from there and left the Midwest far behind to take a position at the Aquarium of the Pacific, someplace in California.
Yes. I was hired as the Vice President of Education out there. I was their seventh employee. And
so they were just getting off the ground?
Getting off the ground, yes.
Wow.
We had a dirt hole in the ground. Some of the walls were starting to go up for the actual building of the aquarium. Hmm. And I was there about a year and a half before we actually opened our doors to the public. So everything was preparation, and I had a blank slate with money and what did we need to do. And I had everything from AV to education, so it was and graphics and signage, so it was really kind of a great all-around kind of job. It was a lot of work to start something from scratch. I would not trade it for the world, and I ended up with some great staff, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Wow. Well, again, and what an amazing experience, and valuable, I'm sure, for the rest of your career to be involved in the building of something from the ground up and to have to confront all of those really important choices and decisions that have to be made every step along the way.
Yes, it was great because I really learned construction and what it goes into building an aquarium or a zoo, anything like that. So that really helped me in my future, as just about every place I was going had some sort of construction happening with new exhibits and things like that. So it really gave me, and the construction crew was very, very helpful in walking me through some of the processes of what it meant to start something from scratch, and then just being able to immerse yourself in a community that was really rallying behind this new aquarium, and we were going to be kind of the anchor store, so to speak, and it was incredibly helpful, and I was a blessing to be able to be part of that experience.
I bet. From there, you went to the L.A. Zoo. What did you do for the L.A. Zoo?
Well, I was also their director of education, and we had about four construction projects going on at the same time with a different architectural firm. So depending upon the day, you would have to walk into a meeting going, oh, okay, we're talking about this construction. And I think what was really nice about that is I was brought in to, you know, kind of take that department, education department, to a new level. Because it's a very well-established zoo and had been, as opposed to an infant stage, had been around for numerous years. So we were able to kind of, you know, get a little bit fresher and make some changes up there. And again, a wonderful staff and great people up in the city of Los Angeles. We're right in the middle of a park. Griffith Park, not too far from the observatory. So it was just a really great location. Lots of really cool partnerships with the local areas around Griffith Park.
Sounds cool. From there, you went to a place called Dolphin Quest, which I understand is designed to be a very exciting kind of interactive experience for people who come.
Yes, and what was interesting about that job is we have two owners. One was on the West Coast, one was on the East Coast, but all of my staff and our locations were in other areas. We had Bermuda, the Big Island of Hawaii, Oahu, and Tahiti at the time. Uh-huh. So we were in five different time zones, and we had about 100 and maybe 110 people between all of those locations. And so I could start meetings at 6 in the morning with Bermuda because they were 4 hours ahead of me, and end my day with talking to people from Hawaii because they were 2 hours or 3 hours behind me, depending upon the time of the year. So it was a very interesting time, but what really helped me in that was communication, because you were communicating with people via cell phones and via email a lot more than in person, because you were not seeing them And so it really helped me hone my communication skills and be very specific when I needed to talk to somebody.
So you weren't necessarily spending much time in Hawaii and Bermuda and these different locales.
Well, I was actually fortunate to be able to travel to all of those places at least 3 to 4 times a year each place. So I did, but you still have, you know, daily operations of your staff, and they're all over the place. So luckily Skype was starting to come into play, so
right.
We can still see each other all the time.
And in what way was Dolphin Quest an interactive experience?
Well, it was an intimate experience with dolphins in shallow pool areas, depending upon where we were located. And it was a way for guests to get that really good hands-on experience with
the
animals.
So be in and amidst the dolphins.
In and amidst
then.
The dolphins, yes, sir.
Wow.
It was great. And the staff there were wonderful and really helped people engage in wildlife and wild places.
Cool. After that, a zoo that I've been to, the San Diego Zoo, and you were especially involved with kind of a unit within the zoo.
Yes, we were up at the Safari Park. So the zoo has actually two campuses, the zoo, which is actually in Balboa Park, as well as the Safari Park, which is up in Escondido. So it's about a 25-minute drive between both locations. And I was the director of Safari Experiences. So another way to get people engaged with the animals that we had up there, mainly the African animals, going into large field enclosures on a caravan truck or seeing it from the outside and on a cart and an ultimate safari-type tour, sleepovers called Roar and Snore. It was really engaging the general public in every aspect of the zoo and the safari park.
Tell us a little bit about the last place you were, which was in Miami, a place called Jungle Island.
Yes, it was it's a great, about 18 acres, small zoo between downtown Miami and South Beach. The location is awesome. About 300,000 people come there on an annual basis. Ooh. And it's a very intimate setting, but it's really, truly a jungle within the city of Miami. So I was the general manager down there and, again, engaging guests of all ages coming to the jungle.
So as we mentioned earlier, you had sort of had this hunger to return to the Midwest and be a little closer to family. So tell us exactly the circumstances under which you even heard about the Racine Zoo having an opening.
Well, the AZA, the American Zoos and Aquariums Association, will put out different job announcements depending upon what area is promoting it. And I just happened to be looking because I had a friend that was looking for a job. And I said, well, you know, just let me take a look at the association and see what's out there. And I found them a couple of opportunities. And as I was scrolling through it, I'm like, oh, Racine, interesting. It is the Midwest, and I am a Midwest girl at heart. So it was really kind of nice to see something in the area. I mean, it's been many, many years since that position had been opened up. And so I started to inquire a little bit and, got my resume going. And I was, you know, there's so many people out there that could have taken this job and I know that applied for this position. So I was keeping my fingers crossed, and it just happened to work out that I got called for an interview, and it was just wonderful. And I love the board that I get to work for and with, and it's a great experience so far.
So it's in some respects, as someone who's been on the job scarcely a month, you're probably the last person I should be asking for an explanation of the history of the Racine Zoo. And yet I suspect you, even in anticipation of interviewing for the job and so on, did a fair amount of homework, and probably even in this relatively brief amount of time, know something about the zoo's rich history, especially for the sake of people that are not from Racine who are listening to this interview. I think it would be interesting to just hear your perspective on when the zoo was created and sort of over the years what it has traditionally meant to the community.
Well, it was started in 1923, so we are just 8 years shy of being 100 years old. So that is a milestone in itself to have, you know, been around for that long. And it's truly a community zoo. When people talk about it as the gem of Racine, I absolutely get it. It is, the location is amazing. It has had a plethora of animals. in its past, now, and hopefully in its future as we go forward and look at ways to take this zoo into the next 100 years. So, you know, as I look at it, we've got 8 years to, like, turn it into that next millennium, and I really look forward to that. But the history is rich, and it is, again, a very community-based zoo, and everyone around Racine, no matter who I talk to, is just blessed and is just talks about this zoo to the nth degree. And I love the fact that I'm now part of this great facility.
I'm anxious to talk about the animals and the fun part of being a zoo, but for just a moment, I want to talk money because, okay, of course, that's a really significant factor. Mm-hmm. And zoos are not an inexpensive proposition, that is for sure. Over the years, how has the zoo, in a sense, paid its bills and been able to exist, and of course for many, many years, even exist without an admission fee, which of course was pretty extraordinary. Who, in a sense, owns the zoo, and how is its function paid for?
Well, we get some of our money from the city of Racine, and then we get a lot of our money also from our gate receipts, as well as development organizations, different businesses and people that donate to the zoo in order for it to succeed. So that is where we get a lot of our funding right now, but we also still get funding from the city of Racine and all of that. So I think because people rally around a place like this, they're willing to give and donate not only their time, but their money for the success of the zoo. There are very few zoos in the country that are free anymore. As you said, we do have to pay our bills, and we want to make sure that the animals are very well taken care of, which they are, so that's very helpful for us. But we do get, as I said, we get money from the state or the city, and then we also get money from our donations and our members who really support the zoo.
So how many animals are we talking about right now that are housed within the Racine Zoo?
We have a couple hundred individual animals. From the, I think there's 28 species or 63. I forget how many species. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
All those things that I want to remember in the course
yeah,
of a day.
Right.
But we have animals from orangutans to kangaroos to meerkats. So we've got really just a range of animals all over, all sizes, and very engaging exhibit spaces. And what we want people to do is be active participants in their time at the zoo, not just passive participants. So, you know, there's opportunities to feed a giraffe, there's times to talk to a keeper, times to talk to our education staff, there's activities, those types of things. We really want people to immerse themselves in this zoo, and it's their zoo. It's the city of Racine Zoo, it's the county of Racine. It's, to me, all of Wisconsin should be embracing this zoo.
How much does the animal population of the zoo change? And of course, again, you're scarcely a month on the job, but do animals, in a sense, sort of come and go, or by and large, is it a relatively stable population?
Well, it's a stable population. We're just a couple of months away from celebrating our lion baby. Our cubs will be a year old in July, which is quite exciting. So again, we're going to, we work with the AZA and our other sister organizations around the country on whether we're going to trade an animal, or we'll get some of their animals and they'll take some of ours in order to keep the species going and make sure that they're the best viable animals that we have out there. And sometimes we have, because our animals are so well taken care of, we have natural behaviors such as breeding, and hence babies. So that's always a great sign that a zoo is, and especially the animals, are very comfortable in their natural habitats that we have at the zoos. And so if we have breeding and we have babies, that's always a really good sign that they're being well taken care of.
So that something's being done well.
Yes.
Let's talk about one of the most important matters, which is, of course, keeping these animals healthy. Mm-hmm. What kind of a challenge is that? And to what extent is the typical animal inhabitant of the zoo very carefully examined by those that work at the zoo? I mean, to make sure that they are healthy, not developing problems of one kind or another.
Absolutely. We are very much into our health and nutrition. We have a vet that is wonderful with our animals and make sure that, you know, if we're questioning and we want to put them on a certain diet, that we work with our nutritionist and our vet. Our animal care staff is amazing. They see these animals each and every day, and they are out looking and making sure that they're doing okay. We are checking our exhibit spaces on a daily basis to make sure that everything is safe for the animals and for our guests and for our staff. And that kind of holistic, healthy look at our animals really creates a great environment for them, as well as our staff and our guests then get to enjoy the hard work that our staff puts into the exhibits and these wonderful creatures.
Mm-hmm. Where do the animals sleep? Do they generally sleep adjacent to sort of the viewing spaces where people get to view them?
Yes, we do.
Bedrooms kind of tucked in the back?
Yeah, bedroom's a great name for it. It's our back of house for the animals, which is also another place for our keepers and our animal care staff to take a look at the animals, make sure everyone's doing okay. It's kind of like when you call your kids in and you're before they go to bed, you make sure that they're all okay and okay, great, now it's time to go to bed. And sometimes that's also when we feed our animals, depending upon the species. Some get fed on exhibit, some get fed off exhibit. I would consider those their bedrooms when they go back of house. So, but they're very close, and we shift the animals then back onto exhibit so people can see them and bring them in, especially if there's a storm out or something like that. We want to make sure that our animals are safe and we can bring them into a protected environment.
Hmm. One of the most interesting things we see in some of the exhibit spaces is there'll be different toys or different stuff that's in there that obviously is meant for the animals to be interacting with, to be playing with. And sometimes it appears to be human things, you know, some Fisher Price thing, bright plastic, colorful plastic that presumably the animals maybe enjoy playing with. Just say a word about that, that matter of stimulation, which apparently is a more and more important factor in how zoos take care of their animals.
Absolutely. We refer to that as enrichment for our animals. Great question. And it can be everything. Sometimes we'll put their food within an animal Kong. If you think of things where you're stimulating your dogs or your pets to be able to use their minds and all of that, it's the same type of thing. Animals can be our foragers, so if we try to simulate what they would do in the wild, in their natural habitats, to be able to find food and forage for food, it's the same type of thing that we're doing for them within their exhibit space. And it's enrichment really has come a long way in zoos and aquariums to make sure that the animals are mentally stimulated in their spaces, and that's really what we're trying to do. And the keepers and our animal care staff are always trying new things. You know, sometimes the animals will figure it out, and we want to make sure that we can keep their minds active, and it's really great, and so that we're always doing enrichment sort of things for the animals. And sometimes it is just a toy for them to climb on. It can be a big boomer ball that they're going to be playing around with, and it could be hiding food within their exhibit space so that they are actively using their space as they would in their natural habitat.
As opposed to just putting food just in a big bucket right in the middle in plain view and it's always there, you try to make it just tricky enough that its life becomes a little more interesting for them.
Exactly.
What about the matter of the spaces in which these animals are displayed? Because that also seems like something that has changed from, let's say, 50 or 75 years ago. It seems like zoos, for the most part, are taking more seriously the responsibility of housing animals in a space that is at least on some level going to somewhat resemble the kind of space in which they would live if they were in the wild.
Absolutely.
Tell us about the challenge of that and maybe a couple of the examples at the Racine Zoo, maybe about which you are especially proud.
Well, we are, You know, creating natural spaces for the animals to simulate as close to their natural environment as possible, as you say, really has taken advanced steps over the course of several years at zoos and aquariums across the country so that we can display them in what as close to a natural exhibit as possible for them. It also helps them throughout their zoo spaces to be able to kind of be active, you know, go back to the enrichment side of things. It's that same type of atmosphere to be very immersive for the animals, as immersive as we want for our general guests and our people that work there. So looking at the Racine Zoo, if you look at our walkabout exhibit space, which is where our kangaroos are. Just as you come in, right, over to that right-hand side. And you go down there and you're walking through their spaces. It's a large open area. They are able to go all over the space. It really is what they would be in if they were out in their natural area. And those are where we're trying to go to and will continue to go to at the Racine Zoo as we expand and look at different exhibits and animals that we are going to hopefully bring into the zoo.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Beth Heidorn, who is the new executive director of the Racine Zoo. She just began there on the 6th of April, so she's very much just on the job, but already obviously very, very much immersed in the rich life of the Racine Zoo and excited about this upcoming summer season. In addition to, of course, the animals, the most important inhabitants of the zoo, we're also talking about a staff, you said at the moment, of about 38 employees with a staff set to expand as the summer months come in. Just give us some idea about the kind of responsibilities that are taken up by your employees, especially those that might not be immediately obvious to the general public.
Well, what I always like to do is think of the zoo as a small city. So we have a banker. We have facilities folks that are dealing with painting and garage maintenance and building facilities and air conditioning and roofing. We also have our guest relations staff, which is dealing with admissions and running a store, our gift store, running food. We also have our keepers that are taking care of our animals. We have grounds people. So we really are like a mini city within the city of Racine. So I think as we look at that, we have, you know, people go, well, I'm not a biology major. I don't really know enough about animals to go into something like that. You don't need to. You just need to have the passion to want to work at a really cool place and then work with our guests to make sure that they have a great experience as well. So anyone can really work at a zoo. You just have to find the right fit for yourselves. And as we go into our high season, we are hiring some new educators. We've got some interns as well, so which I have a passion for, of course, since that's how I started off in the business, and other staff that are going to be coming on to make sure that we can take care of our large crowds that we have in our summer season.
So, by and large, where do the animals come from? I mean, if and when a place like the Racine Zoo decides that it's finally time for us to have a hippopotamus, we don't have a hippopotamus, we're gonna do that. How do you find a hippopotamus, for instance, or any other member of the animal kingdom where you feel like this is something we need, or when an animal dies of old age or for other reason, natural causes, and in a sense, there's a vacancy in the zoo.
We will be working with our AZA organization, the Zoo and Aquarium Organization around the country. And there's different groups within that, from the bird group to small mammals to those types of things. And we'll try to get the right animals for our location and our place, just like they would other zoos and aquariums are looking for what would fit within their locations. So we work with professionals around the country to make sure that our ideas and where we want to go happen. And if there's another zoo, perhaps that might have a surplus where they've had babies and now they might not have enough room, to continue having that many animals, then they would look for one of us, other organizations, to say, hey, we've got these animals. Would you be able to house them? And then we work together to figure out who's going to house what. And then that's how we would do that. We would, you know, take some of those animals. And if we ever had that, then we would ask the same questions. And someone else would take some of our animals.
Hmm. Are these, generally speaking, trades or are they purchases?
They tend to be trades, but they could be purchases. So our zoo, we have animals at our place that actually belong to another zoo. But they're on, you know, but we take care of them. They're at our zoo for a particular reason. And it's the same type of thing. We have animals at other places that are our animals, but someone else is taking care of them for the reasons sometimes of reproduction. It's just better for that animal to be at a different place, or it's better for other animals to be at our place. So it's really a great national organization that helps make sure that the animals are in the right place for the right healthy, productive reasons that they're in a zoo.
Right. And I suppose in the case particularly of the Racine Zoo, expansion is really not an option. I mean, you have the lake on the one side and the main street on the other, and houses to the left or to the north and to the south. So
right.
The space you have is the space you will always have. So
right.
So expansion is really not an option, nor within the boundaries of your zoo. You don't want it to become unduly crowded, I suppose.
We don't, but we also have a few pockets within our zoo that would make for some great new exhibit spaces, and some of ours will just be remodeled spaces. So if we remodel them, we can, you know, function a little bit differently, and it may look bigger, or it may look where we can get multi-species within an exhibit space. But we do have some pockets of potential areas to expand into some other animals that are currently not at our zoo. But we love to have our big green spaces as well, which really helps for traffic flow and guest experience and all of that. But there's a couple of pockets that we might take a look at.
Hmm. Can you think just off the top of your head of, in a sense, anything that is missing from the Racine Zoo that you really hope at some point can be a part of what it shares with the public? Or by and large, do you feel like, given its size, that the Racine Zoo is essentially offering to the public what it workably can?
I think that we currently offer to the public what we can, and I think that we have some opportunities to grow within our footprint so that we can share even more animals with our guests and our local area. So I never say never. I just don't quite know what that may or may not be yet. But we are going to be doing some strategic planning over the course of the summer to see what may be possibilities. And we will certainly vet all of that information before we would progress in any way, shape, or form.
And when you say we, are you talking about you and the board of directors? I mean, would they be involved in decisions like that?
Absolutely. The board of directors, along with our staff. I mean, we've got staff that have been there 9, 10, and 25 years.
Wow.
So that's great. And we want to make sure that we take all of those ideas that everybody has. I mean, I come in with ideas because, of course, I've been at other places. Other people come in with different ideas. And we want to make sure that it is right for the zoo and right for Racine before we would progress. And so that does take a lot of topics and conversations with a variety of different people, including residents as well as the city of Racine. We need to make sure everyone's on board as we go forward.
I wonder, we've talked a lot about how there is this great positive feeling from the community about the zoo, and with very good reason. I wonder how much you, through the course of your career, have contended with kind of the other side of the coin, where there are some people who might philosophically have a problem with zoos, mm-hmm. in the sense that, you know, you're taking animals and you're putting them into areas in which we can view them. And you know, there are certainly people out there who feel like animals would be happier if they were where they are supposed to be, where they were intended to be. I wonder, in all of these years that you've worked in this field, how much you've had to kind of wrestle with that yourself?
That's a great question. I think sometimes I look at it as, if we were really stewards of our planet and took care of all of our habitats around, you know, we may not need a place like me. or a place like our zoo, because we've taken care of everything else. But we're not necessarily the best stewards of our planet, and we need to be. And so as habitat loss happens and things happen around the world, we need to protect all of our wildlife and our wild places. And we are one of those great institutions that can do that and help people make those connections to nature, to wildlife, wild places, which then is going to make them want to care more about their surroundings. And so, you know, I don't struggle as much as I think that we shouldn't be around, because I want to make sure that we make the connections to the people, again, to be stewards of our planet and our wildlife and wild places. And the more that we do that and the more that we care about that, the better it is for everybody.
One of the interesting facets of the Racine Zoo is that it is also a space that ends up getting utilized for other things, like Animal Crackers Jazz and the Racine Municipal Band and other events which occur on the zoo grounds. Do you see that as a positive? Do you anticipate that changing in any sort of way?
I see it as a great positive, because I think all people and different disciplines can use the zoo as a great venue for their backdrop, as well as a great venue for any sort of event. So I really look forward to Animal Crackers, which is coming up starting in July, as well as the Municipal Band, also starting in July, because, again, different audiences will then be exposed to the zoo. So it really creates that sense of camaraderie and, oh, I didn't even know, you know, as sometimes people don't know what's in their backyard,
right.
As much as we'd like to say that they do. Sometimes they don't. And then this just gets different audiences. And I see that with school groups. I see that with every sort of group that's out there could use the zoo as a venue for us. So I love special events, and I think that the Racine Zoo does it phenomenally.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that band shell right against the lakefront. I've had the pleasure of singing with the Racine Municipal Band on, you know, many, many occasions.
Okay.
And I never tire of that lovely, lovely setting.
It's a gorgeous setting. It really is one of the prettiest places here in Racine. And in zoos in general, the location is phenomenal, better than others. And so I really look forward to it. I hope you come and sing again, too. I'd love to hear you.
That's the plan.
When you're with the band. That'd be great.
So tell us about some specific zoo events that people should have on their calendars.
Well, this upcoming weekend, it's Endangered Species Day on Friday, and we're celebrating our Andean bears on Saturday. So we have these sort of what we call conservation or discovery days. So we've got the Andean bears on the May 16th. We've got giraffes that we're highlighting in June on Father's Day. We have rhinos coming up in September. So what we try to do is look at the different species that we have. It is National Endangered Species Day is a national day. So zoos across the country and aquariums across the country are going to be celebrating that. And this particular year, we're highlighting our Andean bears. So, but you can come out anytime. We also, as we said, we've got the Animal Crackers. We've got the Municipal Band coming up. 4th of July is huge. And I look forward to celebrating that. We just had Mother's Day yesterday, although the weather wasn't the best. We had a lot of people out there doing activities.
Oh.
They got flowers when they left. The kids were making their mom's cards right there at the zoo. So it's any sort of activity like that we're going to be highlighting and really focusing on a lot this upcoming summer. And we're going to look a few other things hopefully in August. I can't tell you about them yet, but I look forward to coming back on your show and talking about some of the highlights that we've got coming up.
You mentioned something interesting before we went on the air about how well, I'll let you tell our listeners about what you hear from a lot of people when you ask them about the Racine Zoo, the fond things they say, but the way in which you hope to kind of take that and sort of take it to the next level.
Yes, when I talk to people about the zoo, and actually I don't even have to ask them. Everyone is willing to tell me their ideas about the zoo, which I absolutely love. And most people are like, oh my gosh, I grew up at the zoo. I remember it when I was a little kid. My parents used to take me there. My next question to them is usually, well, when was the last time you were at the zoo? Just for myself to get some information. Oh, it's been 20 years. 20 years, we'll come back to the, what I want people to do is come back to the zoo and bring their parents who was so were so nice to bring their children to the zoo, and they should then bring their kids or unfortunately, I don't have kids of my own, but I'm the best aunt on the planet. And I would bring my nieces and nephews to the zoo all the time. So I like that multi-generational approach to the zoo. And again, that's kind of that holistic look at how we can be there for all ages. And I just want people, no matter who they are, whatever their age is to come back to the zoo because they have the fond memories. Let's make some more memories for them. And that's certainly our goal this year.
You know, I'm reminded, too, that although we, of course, are just to the south of Milwaukee, which has a very good-sized zoo, and of course, there's a big zoo down in Chicago as well, that in many cases, you don't want an experience like that. You don't want to shell out that kind of money, and you maybe don't have that kind of time. It's sometimes the most wonderful, brief little outing to head to a place like the Racine Zoo, and you can see everything, and it doesn't take that long. It's not, you're not exhausted by the end of it. I mean, I think I've, maybe in my old age, I've come to appreciate that facet about the Racine Zoo, which I don't think once upon a time I fully appreciated.
Right, and I think what's really nice is we have a lot of members and member households around Racine County. So people can, you know, they pay their membership, and then they can come any day, whenever they could come every day of the week if they want to. And we do have, I've already met many of our members, and some of them I see two or three times in a week. They just put their walking shoes on and take a walk around the zoo, check out the animals, just enjoy being outside in nature, and it's just a marvelous experience. And as you say, it won't take you 8 hours, but you're welcome to come and spend 8 hours there. That's not a problem for us. We will take care of you if you're there for that long. But it really is, it can be that little snippet that just makes people feel better. If I ever just want to get out and just go, oh, I just need to take a breath, I'll walk out, I'll go see the meerkats, I'll go hang out and check out the orangutans for a while. Just take that deep breath, and it just kind of makes you feel better, and I think that's what we do for a lot of people, and I really appreciate that people see us as that, too.
Very good. For more information about the Racine Zoo, about what's going on, about ways in which people can help the zoo if they want to be part of this good cause, I imagine a visit to the Racine Zoo website would be the best thing.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. All of our activities are on there. The hours are listed per day, what's happening, different presentations that are going to be coming up this summer. So that is the best spot to check right now for anything that's happening on a daily basis.
Very good. Elizabeth Heidorn is the executive director of the Racine Zoo. It is great to meet you, and we wish you very, very very happy years at the Racine Zoo, and hope that we can talk many, many times on the morning show.
Thank you so much, Greg. It was a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you here. Our rebroadcasts of favorite morning shows from 2015 continues tomorrow with Ray Cross, president of the University of Wisconsin System, a conversation which we recorded last year when he came to town to visit the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we want to remind you that the archive for the morning show is now very easily found right on the front page of WGTD's beautiful new website, wgtd.org. Our weather forecast for southeastern Wisconsin and northeastern Illinois is for sunny skies and seasonal temperatures. We're headed for a high today of 33 degrees, partly cloudy overnight with a low of 22 degrees. A mostly sunny day tomorrow, breezy conditions, a high of 36 degrees, warming to 37 on Thursday to 39 on Friday. Cloudier conditions expected later in the week, a very good chance of rain on Friday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha.